Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Focus Group podcast. I'm Sarah Longwell, publisher of The Bulwark. And this week, we are talking about a real wild card in the 2024 presidential election, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., RFK, who's running as an independent and breaking double digits in many national polls. Now, RFK is a bit of a paradox. On one hand, he's an environmentalist, and on the other hand, he's also an anti-vaxxer. And he comes from one of the most prominent families in Democratic politics. And he's also been doing interviews with the likes of Steve Bannon. So it's not entirely clear whether his candidacy will hurt Trump or Biden more. I wanted to dig into why voters in both political parties are interested in Kennedy. And to discuss it all, my guest today is Ested Herndon, New York Times national political reporter and host of their excellent politics podcast, The Run-Up. It is one of my favorites. Ested, thanks for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate you listening, too.
Yeah. You know, I'm a political junkie, so what can I do?
Yeah. That's all.
And you get out there. You get out there and talk to people, which is like my favorite thing to do. So yeah. I love your work.
I think we share a similar premise of wanting to hear people's voices and hear them directly. And so I really love the work that y'all do. And we think of the Run-Up as an opportunity to bring in those voices from the ground that often get left out. So, you know, that's the whole idea.
Do you know what else I like about the Run-Up is you seem like genuinely curious about people. And like, even when people are saying just really, really bad stuff, crazy things, I still think they're sort of delightful.
Yeah.
They're funny and they're quirky and they're great. You seem to like people is one of the things that comes through in your work.
Yeah, no, I totally think that that's a shared thing. I want to hear people talk. I want them to be themselves. And even if people, and I believe that like all votes count the same. And so like, even if the reasoning might not be ideologically consistent, or even if it's someone who doesn't pay attention, I still want to find out like what their story is and how they kind of fit into this, because I think they do.
Yeah. And their votes do, in fact, count the same. And so, like, even when they're inconsistent, they are often, in fact, they are maybe a majority of the time inconsistent because people don't spend their lives sitting around being like, oh, in this buffet of ideas that I can choose from, do they all fit in this neat little box the way that we love to talk about them? Yeah. Anyway, good, fun, mutual appreciation. So RFK, I'm going to admit, I have been obsessed with like the no labels.
Yeah.
Because that for me, it infringes on my work, I guess, like to the extent that my work is figuring out how to get sort of these right-leaning independent soft GOP voters to not vote for Trump. Those voters tend to be very susceptible to kind of a Larry Hogan, Joe Manchin, Mitt Romney, no labelsy type fantasy centrist candidate. I too would be susceptible to the no labels type fantasy candidate in a different scenario. The RFK stuff is not. Those voters are much more of a mystery to me, because I don't understand why somebody would like RFK, but there's clearly a constituency out there for him. So I wanted to dig into that. But you talked to him recently.
Yeah.
You did an interview with him and it got a little bit testy. So like, just tell us what happened, what that interview was like, and what you sort of brought away from the experience of interviewing him.
Yeah, I mean, we've kind of been on this journey of now with the general election set, wanting to set up the broad parameters that are going to inform the race. And so it was actually a part of a run of episodes where we were focusing on how did this race kind of come to be and answering, I think, the question we get most on the road, which is like, how are we back at Biden versus Trump again? So the first thing we did was actually go through that and say, this is how Biden happened, this is how Trump happened, and kind of push the parties respectively on kind of putting voters back in the position that the majority of voters say they don't want to be in. As we were going through that process, to your point, like with polling right now, RFK is a little bit of an elephant in the room because it's a big enough number where it can't be ignored if we're talking about 10, 12%, even somewhat higher in national surveys. And I think thematically, it fits with what we hear about people wanting other options, right? And so we reached out under the premise of like a open exploration of like, what is this about? And is this a real effort of running for president, right? And so I guess that's what I was kind of up to, was to kind of gauge not only a life story, but a seriousness of candidacy. And not in the, do I think you're going to win? But do you think you're going to win? Like, are you doing this to try to quote unquote win? Are you doing this for attention? Are you doing this because of your core set of beliefs? And part of doing it in the middle, I was like, oh, this is a true believer. And partially it's because it's so hard to get him to talk about things that aren't his favorite set of conspiracies. And so even when you go through his life, you know, talking about his family, talking about, you know, what he, you know, went through and the kind of really publicly tragic events, uncle killed at 9, father killed at 14. He talked about his kind of years long addiction problems that developed after that. But he really says that, like, finding environmentalism saved him. And that quickly transitions, though, to a belief about mercury in fish and how that impacts vaccines. And so you cannot separate the person, the candidate, and the beliefs. They are all wrapped in. And I think for me, that became really clear. It's like, okay, this isn't just a guy trying to even typically spoil, I think, in the natural ways. This is a kind of zealot about their message and is very comfortable playing that role. And he knows that he has a dedicated set of fans from it. And all of that became really clear. And so I think it ended up building to that question of spoiler where we do get really testy at the end. Where he's basically saying, I don't care. Everybody asked me about spoiler. And I basically was trying to say, is it convenient for you to not care? It's kind of a crazy question to make someone try to admit. But I'm like, you know, it's awfully convenient that, you know, if the election has the stakes that you're saying it does, but you're also someone who will be pretty insulated from the results of those stakes. That makes it pretty easy for you not to care about your impact. That's where we end up landing, and that's where we end up fighting on.
Yeah, it's fascinating. Did you believe him, though, that he doesn't care if he's a spoiler in the sense that if he thought he was going to be a spoiler for Biden, do you think he would care? Or do you think he just doesn't care if he's a spoiler for Trump?
I think it's both ways. He's not a Republican, right? I think this is someone who views his identity as Democratic.
But Trump's not a Republican either.
Yeah.
Right? I think, and also does not care about the Republican Party and doesn't care about sort of a set of traditional Republican ideas.
Yeah. It's clear that COVID is his Democratic problem, right? He thinks that the party got overtaken by science and medical elite in COVID and that the vaccine backlash wave is happening now. But he does not really articulate a problem with the Democratic Party outside of how it handled COVID and its relationship to big pharma vaccines. There's not like some like principled ideological problem with most of the Democratic agenda, you know?
Yeah.
And so I think there's a difference between him personally and who he pulls from and who the message is for. Because it's not as if he's making overtures to like young people upset about Gaza, you know? He's not making big overtures to the climate activists upset with Biden. And so I don't really take him seriously on that front, because it's not as if there's a campaign that's trying to cobble together even the upset, unenthusiastic parts of the electorate. That's why I say it's message driven. It's only about vaccine. It's only about, you know.
Yeah.
You either have to know nothing about him, which I think a lot of people still don't, and it's just name ID, or you got to like the beliefs, because when he's going to talk, he's going to talk about that. And so I think one thing I thought during it is it's not clear to me that this is someone who, as they hear more of him, their support gains. Right.
You mean as you watch the focus groups?
Yeah.
I'm
like, more RFK does not inherently seem to me better for him.
Yeah. So I agree with this. And let's start listening to the voters, because I think that this is like really a big piece of the question is like, do they know him? What do they know about him? And what do they think about him once they know more about him? So we did two focus groups to prepare for this episode. And we did 2020 Trump voters who are leaning toward RFK if the election were today, and 2020 Biden voters also leaning toward RFK. So I want to start with the Trump voters and their interests. Let's listen.
From a rhetoric standpoint, I think he's displayed already that he's not willing to go to either side, and he's willing to say that he's been wrong on some issues. He's been willing to say that the right has been correct on some issues, including Donald Trump. I mean, he's a lifelong Democrat. He's a Kennedy. My hope is that he doesn't get into the name calling and divisive speech that we're so used to now that's media driven. And I think he can cut through that. He's conservative on some things, but he's like a true liberal. We need good liberals in this country. We need good conservatives, but we need to have that conversation.
I think he has a lot more knowledge of maneuverability in politics than, say, what Trump had. So he'd be able to maneuver a little bit better than what Trump, you know, had to deal with, where there was always somebody trying to make it so he wasn't successful.
With all due respect to Donald Trump, I mean, let's face it, he's not a glad hander. I mean, he's a pretty strong personality. So when you look at Kennedy and he talks about bipartisanship, I'm like, you know, look, finally, that somebody that is like going to walk the walk and talk the talk and not just use it as a bunch of rhetoric.
Although I do think Trump, I agree with all his policies, foreign policies as well as economic policies, and thought he did a great job. Unfortunately, I do feel like he's so polarizing now that it is very hard for him to be as effective as I think he could be. So it is nice to have a refreshing, like, kind of like breath of air with RFK, who knows that the government is corrupt, right? I mean, they killed his uncle and basically have his family. So this is somebody who knows that a government that's too big is not good for any country.
A Kennedy position that I like is he says he wants to get pesticides and chemicals out of food. Look at sperm count in men over the last few decades. Look at average testosterone levels. Look at your young American men. It's a problem. If you wonder, like, why are young men depressed? Well, before you give them an SSRI, I don't know, check their testosterone level. There's xenoestrogens and phytoestrogens in food and in packaging, chemicals, plastics, whatever.
Okay, so those were the Trump voters. There's a bunch of things that they say about Kennedy that just aren't true. And that was just a smattering of the sound. Like, this is a thing with third parties in general, which is when you don't like either of your choices, what you do is you impute, you like project your hopes and dreams and wishes onto this third party idea. And so with the No Labels candidacy, everybody is just like, No Labels keeps putting out these polls that are like, you know, 60% of Americans want this other thing. And you're like, yeah, they want whatever their ideal version is. And then here, listening to these Trump voters, it's a little bit wild what some of them think. Like, he's going to be hugely bipartisan.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
There's no evidence that this is a guy that's going to be hugely bipartisan. What he's doing is actually being, like, anti-partisan on either side. And I guess, first of all, just give me your reaction overall to sort of what you feel like you've heard from those voters about why they like Kennedy.
I definitely agree that, like, it's like when people say that they're independents and you'll ask, okay, have you, do you actually vote for both parties? And they actually, when you ask the follow-up question, it's often not true, right? Like, they like the idea of bipartisanship. And so oftentimes when we talk to voters, they will say that they're looking for someone who speaks in that language, even if they can't really tell you on what issue they want that compromise to be on. And I think it's the branding of independent, too, allows RFK to, like, exist as some idea of him, like, floating above the system and both parties. And if I do think, I hear something consistently, and like, I do think there is a system distaste that Trump obviously speaks to, but he speaks to also. And so I think if you are looking for someone who talks in that language, but exists above the parties as an actual structure, I can hear that. And the other thing I heard is, like, you do hear Trump voters often say they think he has a lot of baggage.
Yeah.
And so the idea of, like, them as completely ignoring Trump baggage isn't fully true. And for some people, I do think, like, when we talk to type of Haley voters, when we talk to people who are, like, looking for other options, a lot of them were satisfied with Donald Trump as a policymaker. They just were kind of sick of the other stuff. When we talk about who Kennedy's audience is, he does Rogan's podcast, all that kind of manosphere language. And so when the guy's talking about testosterone levels and you know, taking toxins out of food, those are things that overlap with that world. And I hear that really clearly, too.
Yeah, I mean, I knew Ron DeSantis was toast when I started to hear voters say in the groups, he's just a regular politician. Mm-hmm. Because the thing that voters really love about an RFK or even a Donald Trump is they want somebody who's not a regular politician.
Yeah.
I think the through line for both parties here, and when somebody says breath of fresh air, like, what they really mean is, like, I want somebody anti-establishment. And some people, it's, like, almost destructive. Like, I want someone who's going to burn it all down.
Yep.
And then other people, it's actually more conciliatory. It's like, I want compromise and I want people to work together. I'm sick of the way the two parties are at each other's throats. But, like, RFK is not both of those things.
Right, exactly. Right?
As people learn more about him, something's got to give in terms of, like, who this guy is. At this point in the race where things are still pretty low info on a brand new candidate, you can get, as we did, two groups, both Dems and Republicans, to say roughly similar things about this random third party guy, or to be pulling out the things that they like. But over time, I think that has to diminish. So let's go into that. Otherwise, we're just going to get ahead of ourselves. So I want to talk to these 2020 Biden voters who are leaning RFK. Let's listen to how they talked about him.
I think that he's pro-health, not just pro-healthcare. You know, I think that he wants people to live healthy lives. I think that he's pro-science. He wants to follow the science. I think that he wants to cut down on spending, especially on foreign wars and things like that. I think he's for more transparency.
I have heard, of course, on the news, negativity, but people can change. And regardless of what he did in his past, you know, I give him a pass that he corrected that and has become a better person. You're going to find something wrong in everything, but that's one positive thing. He's bettered himself, and I think he wants to better our country as opposed to the other two that are more obsessed with being a politician and the attention. And I think he really wants to do something good for us.
You know, his conservation work is to be admired. Cleaning the waterways has a lot of pluses, but depending on how hard you dig, though, he's not exactly, you know, prima crop perfect either. Wherever you look, you're gonna find problems or issues with all candidates if you dig deep enough.
I don't agree with all of the things he stands for, but one thing I do like are his motions towards environmental justice.
I think the main drawing point for me is that he's not super old. Like, I agree with, like, some of his points, but, like, some of them I don't. There's actually, like, some glaring ones that I, like, definitely disagree with. But I don't know. I can say that about any candidate, really. So, like, as a chemist, I have my doctorate, like, in researching medicine. And I feel like it's difficult for me to sit here and, like, one of y'all said how, like, he's following the science, and I'm like, as someone who can actually, like, read, like, scientific literature, he's not.
I like that he's trying to take power out of the corporation's hands. I like that he's trying to spread truth about the vaccinations. I have concerns that he's going to be edged out. He's not going to get close enough. They're going to propagandize him and or assassinate him before or after the election.
So it seems like right now he's like a living Rorschach test for like what voters want him to be. And so the Democrats, you can just hear clearly, like they hear, okay, this is a guy fighting big corporations. He's an environmentalist. He loves conservation. You're right, though. There's this like through line of like dudes who are thinking about how I've seen just a handful of videos of him doing many push-ups, being without a shirt on.
He does this, like, masculinity appeal kind of.
Yeah. There's certainly the Joe Rogan Barstool Sports set that, like, right now has been moving more and more Trumpy. There's just, like, a section of those guys that seem ready to sort of break off. However, there was one of those guys in the Biden group and one of those guys in the Trump group.
Mm-hmm.
So the question that we were getting at after the first set that I want to ask again and get, like, a pretty direct answer on is, like, can he keep drawing from both, or is at some point it going to be like, no, this guy is a much better fit for sort of the Barstool Sports Trump side of things? Or is he going to be a place for disaffected Democrats to stash their vote, feeling like, yeah, Biden hasn't done enough on the environment and they forgive all the anti-vaxxing, hyper-masculinity? Like, which way does it go?
Mm-hmm. I think, one, scrutiny is going to hurt him as he gets closer. I think more people start learning about his beliefs. I think if our interview's any clue, I don't think he's a figure who's going to take scrutiny well. And so I think that that's going to mess up some of that. But I do say that, like, when you think about the vaccine, there was a lot of what we would consider, like, disaffected Democratic areas where that was actually a big issue. I think about in New York, right? Like, my neighbors hate the vax. Like, they, like, talk about it all the time. And I think legitimately have become less Democratic as an identity because they feel a thing was pushed on them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think that type of person is in both parties. And I think Republicans obviously had a much larger language and big advocacy around that. And I remember somebody telling me their breaking point with Donald Trump was his push of vaccines. I think his anti-vax message is actually a bipartisan disaffected message. But I think there's a limit to the seriousness of it, right? So I'm like, is he going to be Ross Perot? I'm not sure. But can he pull in certain places? And I think, should they be legitimately worried that that can come from either bucket? Yes.
Yes.
And I don't think that's changing. Because I actually do think he is right that the sentiment that has been fringy of his, he can repackage in a slightly less fringy way. Right. So he doesn't have to talk about autism. He doesn't talk about mercury and fish. It's going to be Fauci.
Yeah.
It's going to be lab leak. It's going to be they weren't honest with you. And so I don't think that is a mass galvanizing thing, but I think that's a little more bipartisan than we might sometimes like to think of it. Like when I'm thinking about Democrats, there's a certain type of Democrats who will never hear that message.
Right.
But I don't think that's who he's talking to.
Yeah, I agree with that. I do wonder, because I think there's been a political realignment going on for a while now that has consolidated the sort of anti-vax, bro-y, barstool sports.
Within Trump.
Within Trump. Not fully consolidated, but I don't know that I think it's 50-50. My colleague, J.B. Last, makes this point that there's sort of like a, I don't know if he was calling it horseshoe, but basically that like it used to be evenly distributed among both parties because there's like a kooky lefty, I live in the hills of Arizona in this trailer with sundials and I'm a lefty and I don't like GMOs in my food, even though they're all in everything. Then his point is that they've now consolidated in the Republican Party. And I think that's directionally correct. I'm not as definitive as he is about it because I still hear it in the Dem groups. Mm-hmm. But I guess if I went through these people in the groups, I was doing this exercise in my head. I thought, which of these people, as they learned more real things about Kennedy,
That's a good question to ask,
would want to vote for him? And would want to vote for him more or less. And like the science girl, the girl who was like, she was like, this guy's an anti-vaxxer. The fact that she's considering voting for him, I cannot explain right now, other than she thinks they're both old and doesn't like that. Doesn't want to vote for Biden clearly because he's old and maybe she's got some other issues with him. But like, she's not going to vote for Kennedy ultimately was my thought. And I sort of started to feel after listening to these groups that I did feel like it's weird because Trump wants him in the race clearly. But I'm not sure ultimately once the education has been done by sort of like the Liz Smith part of the Dem operative world that I felt like the Dems could be pulled back to Biden in a way that the Republicans would still vote for Kennedy.
I totally think that if I were placing bets, I would place on him taking more Trump voters than Biden voters right now. But it's partially because I remember like that Ron Paul Elaine of Republicans that Trump did consolidate.
Yeah, totally. Like,
and I remember being in Arizona and people talking to me about JFK assassination, vaccines. It was this Ron Paul. It was that whole world. That crowd really did line up behind Trump. There's actually a funky relationship he has with those type of people who have both seen Trump as a vessel and I think have grown increasingly seeing him as an establishment Republican figure in the last couple of years. And so they were like, we see ourselves as a movement in which he is a vessel of, not that he controls. And like a lot of that language has become more clear. And so I'm like, I do think that there are growing gaps between Trump and Republicans that someone like RFK can seize on. And so if I'm the Trump campaign, I would not be encouraging of RFK in this race.
Yeah.
I don't think they've woken up to that yet. But like, I'm surprised they don't have a Liz Smith operation too.
And do you think, since many of the people in these groups were pretty hot on a lot of conspiracies, let me introduce my own conspiracy into this, which is like, is it possible that Trump and RFK like are simpatico on this and that RFK drops out and endorses Trump eventually? Because like, if I were looking at Kennedy right now, he dropped out, I bet he would endorse Trump over Biden, being like, we need somebody to go after the system. And at least Trump will do that. Biden's too establishment.
It was interesting because in the interview, I asked him, what is your problem with Trump? Like, he sends a lot of anti-system language right now. I don't think he's like some hot believer in big pharma. Like, I don't know, like, seems like he can do what you're trying to do. And he just dismissed it really offhand. But I have the same question. Like,
yeah,
there's a way that he could just become a Trump Republican and like have these same beliefs and continue on. I really do think the family matters. Like, I really do think he will never not be a Democrat.
So it's clear the name Kennedy has elevated his campaign, but like not always in the way you might expect. I want to listen to how Biden voters largely brush off the fact that Kennedy's family isn't supporting him.
It's almost a positive because I think that the Kennedy family is so entrenched in politics. And like, I don't want someone like that. You know what I mean? Like, I want someone coming in fresh and with new, bold ideas. I don't want the same old politics, you know, which the Kennedys have obviously been a part of for decades.
I appreciate it because I feel like nepotism is not involved at all. And also it distinguishes him from the Trump party in which he like came with a lot of money and like running a political like agenda is very costly. And so the fact that he's even made it this far running his own campaign is honestly a pro for me.
I mean, it's probably something personal, family level that has nothing to do with his political stance and what he would like to do for our country. Could be a jealousy thing. Who knows?
No, definitely think that it has an impact on how I think about him. Is it family members taking a step back, makes it look a little bit closer, is maybe what I'm thinking. But, you know, me and my brother don't get along, so.
Okay, so that's the Democrats basically being like, I don't care if his family disavows him because me and my brother don't like each other either and our families fight. And actually, it's good because the legacy, the establishment of the Kennedys, that's not, you know, all over him. But then let's listen to how the Trump voters talk about it.
Even though he came from a political family, I see him coming in as an outsider and not entrenched in the you scratch my back, I'll scratch yours. What can I get out of this? You know, what can my buddies and my cronies get out of this? But I see him coming in with sort of like fresh face and what can I do to make the country better? Like when Trump first ran, I saw him as an outsider coming in. He was a businessman and not a politician. And he came into office to run the country sort of like a business, but to look out for our best interests.
I saw the Super Bowl ad and I loved it. I know that his campaign didn't run it. He didn't endorse it, but I loved it. I loved that vintage feel, you know, Kennedy, 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 you know, like, and I think RFK Jr. is leaning more conservative than the party of his forebears. The Democrats, as I see them, are not your classic liberal. When I say liberal, I don't mean like leftist, but there's a leftist element entrenched in the Democrat Party, and it's not JFK's Democrat Party.
Okay, so just like the Rorschach thing, it's like the Kennedy name lets him have it both ways, right? Because for some, he can project the sort of Camelot sheen, name ID, brand on the whole thing. But for those who like the more skeptical, you know, conspiracy-minded part of his brand, it's a feature that the whole family's against him.
Yes.
So do you think he's trying to have it both ways? And which of these will ultimately be more important?
He's definitely trying to have it both ways. He knows the power of the name, and he loves it. I mean, I think it's his identity. So,
sure.
You know, when we talk about him and his positioning in this race or why he decided to even start, I was like, why did you have to become the anti-vax guy? Like, you could have just had these beliefs privately, you know? Like, why did you have to make this thing? And he talks about his father and, like, how I think that my father would be proud of, like, going up against, you know, taking on and speaking out and blah, 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 blah. I believe him, actually, that he sees this as a legacy piece. Even the stories he would tell about when he was thinking about running and not running, like, he's very clearly been moving in Democrat politics for a while. Calls with Hillary Clinton. Well, maybe I will get this open Senate seat. He wanted his father's seat. And so I'm like, he invokes it enough where I know that he is conscious of how it brings people to him. At the same time, he invokes the outsiderness. And so it is Trump-like in the most insider-outsider ever, you know? And that is a quality I think people like, because people do like the idea of an outsider, because the worst villain in this scenario is the political system itself. Like, no one is in favor of the status quo. And so he gets to pitch himself as both rule breaker and, I mean, we talk to people who just assume he has some intimate knowledge of the political system and how Washington works because his uncle was president. And I'm like, I guess. Like, I don't really think that's true. It was a long time ago. And he
was a long time ago.
Like,
a lot of life has happened to him since then.
Yeah, but people just say that. They'll be like, oh, he'll know how to work with both parties. And I'm sure he knows how, you know.
They said it in these groups. There was people in the groups who were saying, you know, like, he's just sort of got more experience. And, and it was sort of a, when did he get the experience? But I got to tell you, you know, this is replete through focus groups, but it was acute in the people who were leaning Kennedy, which is the sense that all politics is corrupt. Mm-hmm. All politicians, and especially the establishment, is corrupt and corrupting. This idea of that insider-outsider formulation you just said is exactly right. They feel like everything's so corrupt. But what they liked about Trump was that Trump understood the system.
Yes.
But said he was going to, like, drain the swamp, right? So they understand they don't know everything that's going on. They're very sure that there's so much going on below the surface that is just there to pull the wool over their eyes. So they want somebody who knows the system, but they also want somebody who comes from the outside. And this is where Kennedy and Trump are like a perfect circle in the Venn diagram.
I'm sure they say this to you, but the amount of times I've heard that Trump knows where the bodies are buried over the last 2 years, it's like a favorite phrase. And I'm not talking about like kind of 2017 when he was like trying to cosplay as normal politician sometimes. I'm saying they think like he's done doing that. He now knows how to operate. But mostly like that underlying belief of corruption, I do think it's who acknowledges that for a lot of people is like a core checklist.
Yes.
You know, and so Joe Biden is never going to say, doesn't believe that the government is that the top level, you know, like, you know what I'm saying? But Donald Trump is going to say that every day. And RFK is frankly going to say that every day. And like, I do think that's the core of this election. Honestly, you can probably make it more complicated and all of that. But like, that's going to be the tonal difference. And I think political dividing line, because I do think there's a sense of unjustness in the air or wrongness, right? I remember this guy we talked to end of last year, who I think about all the time, who's told me, like, if these are the two candidates the parties produce, I just think that just reflects on them. Clearly, we have a systemic problem. It's so intuitively obvious to someone. That's why the uniqueness of the rematch, I think, really matters. It's because for a lot of people, it's a confirming belief of a broken system.
Yeah. And if you believe that it is just deeply broken, that's when it gets easy to be like, just burn it down, guys.
Yes, 100%.
Like, just give me someone who's going to burn this thing to the ground. And then it's like, do you think that guy is Trump or Kennedy? Like, you don't care about spoilers at that point. You're just like, give me the biggest hammer to hit this thing with. And I think that that sensibility is really fundamental to our politics right now. Even the disconnect between like the actual economy and people's perceptions of the economy, even though I think and argue constantly that I think there are real issues that still plague people in the economy, despite the fact that on paper it's doing great. But like, there is just this sense of like everything is broken. When you ask people like, how are things going in the country? Like at the top, we ask this question at every focus group at the top. And it's getting a little better among Democrats. Like I'm starting to hear things about like the economy turning around. Like just for such a long time now, I've heard people be like, it's a disaster. It's a catastrophe. It is the worst. It's like the Great Depression. You know, it's just like the worst we've ever seen. And if you feel that way, then like you have no interest in preserving systems, which is, I think, when Joe Biden makes an argument for democracy, I think this is always like, it's not wrong to want to protect democracy. I just think it sort of misses the thing where it's like people who want things to work and to continue and actually like institutions and like them to work versus people who are like, no, this stuff's all broken and I want to like crush it.
I think it's interesting because I too think the democracy language, I get why they do it, because I think in a kind of super voter way and the people most likely to come out, it's still a 55-45 argument. They do mostly want things to work.
Yes.
And I think it's, frankly, an electoral problem for Donald Trump. Like, I don't want to overdo it because I'm like, it is a problem that your promise is breaking things.
Yeah.
Like, that isn't popular. But what I do think what Biden folks have to acknowledge is that there is a 45% or some percentage that does want to break it. And so I'm like, I both get the argument of why they go for it. But it, to your point, what I think frustrates me about Democrats, based on reporting and like what I hear from, is like they're not making arguments about improving. It's much more preservation.
Yes.
Because they could say, we get this isn't working.
Yeah.
And actually, but there's ways to do it that aren't what Donald Trump or Robert F. Kennedy are promising.
Yeah, there's a way to make an argument for more perfect, right?
Yes.
Like, we need to make things more perfect because they are not perfect yet. And that is our job as progressives, whatever. But like, he just wants to tear the whole thing down. Yeah.
Yeah. And I don't think they've mastered how to do it, but frankly, because I don't think that there's a full acknowledgement of the brokenness among, I think, top levels of Democratic Party. I think that they recognize things are broken when they're not winning. Like,
yeah.
2016, that causes a soul search.
Yeah.
And so I think if they were to lose, we would hear a lot of that.
Yeah.
But I think there's no incentive to just yet because they're doing pretty well on the bottom levels. And like, they're really confident in the plan that the choice will eventually do the work for them.
I want to talk about his VP pick, RFK's VP pick, who he announced on March 26th, Nicole Shanahan, who is someone I basically had never heard of before he picked her as her VP, is a Silicon Valley lawyer and was previously a donor to a pro-Kennedy super PAC. And she funded that JFK throwback Super Bowl commercial. Got that mentioned in the group. By the way, if you watch both these groups, one of the funniest parts to me was everyone in the Trump group saw the Kennedy ad because they were watching the Super Bowl. The libs, not watching the Super Bowl, like only one person had seen that ad. It was just such a perfect cultural moment. So I just want to play the snap judgments. Like, I haven't heard of her. None of these people have really heard of her either. So let's listen to the snap judgments of Shanahan from the Biden voters and then two Trump voters.
As far as what I understand, I think it's going to take a lot of money to get him on the ballot everywhere. And so I think he didn't have a lot of choice but to go with someone that had a lot of resources.
That's pretty much the way America works. The people with the most money eventually have the most power. You know, and I don't know that there's anything inherently wrong with it. I mean, if she can take a good man with good policies and use her money to lift him into a position where he can actually make some good things happen, I'm all for it.
I'm wary of the VP with the Silicon Valley connections because it was Silicon Valley that was at the behest of the White House that was suppressing what they called misinformation. How dare somebody have a differing opinion? So I'm kind of skeptical of that.
I just want to call it that middle person who, after all the talk about how mad people were about corruption and it was basically like, well, that's how America works. You know, you got a lot of money, you get all the power, and that's probably fine. Yeah, just okay.
You're like, honestly, I'm not mad at it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not mad about it. So your interview with him took place before he added.
Right before. Nicole. He was teasing it at the
time. Yeah, right. Why do you think he chose her?
Well, my sense of talking to our folks who do some reporting with them is that there's like a personal connection that I think he wanted to seem softer. And there was some like kind of identity, gender appeal there. She talks a lot about vaccines causing autism. She has a child who is autistic. And I think that mattered a lot. And I think, you know, money helps. And so they are in this race, as you know, to get on these ballots. And that's going to require a lot of money. And I think an easy way to secure some of that keep rolling in is to make sure that person's on the ticket too. But, you know, I don't think it was like a, you know, vetted operation of like poll testing appeal. Like, I think based on the list that we saw with Aaron Rodgers and other folks too, I think it was people he likes and knows likes him and who would be most useful.
I mean, maybe you're right. Maybe with the money, I was having a conversation with somebody and they were asking me about what it would mean if he chose Rodgers versus if he chose Shanahan. And like the takeaway from the conversation, and this was more of this person's impression and maybe not mine because I hadn't thought that much about it, was that if he picked Aaron Rodgers, that would look like a straight play for those Trump barstool sports bro types that,
yeah,
you know, I think really would have ultimately eaten into Trump. And it's just, he's got the celebrity angle and the football angle, whereas going with the sort of the crunchy woman does seem to be maybe slightly more like this would help me pull more from the Biden side of things. Does that sound true at all?
I thought the interesting leak of the list, right? Like, you know, it's not usually you get a ESPN alert about VP shortlist, right? So when I got the alert, I was like, well, that's a win for him. Like,
yeah,
like already I'm thinking about him in a way I wasn't thinking about him before and from an unexpected huge source, right? I was always skeptical. Like, Aaron Rodgers has a lot of money to make. His like career is at a very interesting crossroads. I was like, he's not about to run for president, is he? But like, I think money matters. I think the ballot access stuff matters. I think it's going to be expensive. And I think more than flash, they need to get on these ballots.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Like, I see her as the logical, most logical choice to help that happen.
Yeah. All right. So I want to just do this spoiler thing. Because one thing, RFK, like you mentioned this, really took exception to in your conversation was the idea that he was a spoiler. Your podcast, what you called it, Don't Ask RFK Jr. About Being a Spoiler. Yeah. Like, it's literally what you called it. So that concern was real for some of his backers, too, that we talked to. For instance, one said that he would only vote for RFK if Trump looked like a shoo-in. So, like, if he was sure Trump was going to win, then he would vote for RFK because he knew that RFK would be a spoiler. But then there's others who are ready to just burn it all down, right? They're ready to vote for him. So let's hear from a 2020 Biden voter again, followed by two Trump voters talking about the spoiler effect.
Like, if I actually like the third party candidate, I'm going to vote for him regardless of, I know people say like, you're just throwing a vote away or it's going to help this person or that person. Like, that doesn't matter to me if I actually like the third party candidate. And especially in this case where I like RFK and really don't care about Biden or Trump. To me, like, even if people are going to say that's throwing your vote away, I'm fine with that if I want to support the person that I actually, you know, approve of.
Listen, do I believe he's going to be, you know, win the election? No. But I'm at the point now where I don't think that it's a wasted vote. I think we all need to show that the two-party system in its current state is not working. So I hope that that's what it would look like under him, where he could cut through the middle of all of it.
But he can be a dark horse. And it's not just a Ross Perot thing of taking votes away from Al Gore or whatever it was the last time. I don't think he's a Ross Perot. Mm-hmm. But I also think that he has more of a cut through the narrative and straight talk of, like, there's some bits and pieces where he's not just a straight Democrat.
So one thing that was interesting to me listening to the Trump guys talk about RFK is, again, how much they really hate Democrats, but they love a Democrat who's kind of running against other Democrats.
Oh, yeah.
That is where these Trump guys really
standing up
him.
To their own party.
Yes.
Telling it like it is.
He's a real liberal in the real sense, not like these guys who have gone super far left. And so to them, they made some remarks about how he actually seemed conservative, not because he was a conservative, but because the party had gone so crazy and far left that he was like rational and sane, which I think was interesting. But the other thing in these clips that was interesting is I think for most people, nobody really thought he could win. And even that guy who was talking about Perot, I think he was talking about him like he couldn't be as big as Perot or get as many votes as Perot.
Right.
Like, their point is they all acknowledge he can't win, but they seemed, I think for the most part, interested in him getting his message out there.
Yeah.
And so you said he doesn't want to be a spoiler, but these guys, like, they don't care if he's a spoiler that much.
I don't think RFK cares.
Yeah.
But I'm saying it's not a question. If you can't win, you will be spoiled. Whether you want to be or not, the question is, like, kind of irrelevant. Because can you win is the only measure of viability. And I don't think he can, nor does he. Like, that's what RFK was saying. Was that I'm not going to be a spoiler because I'm going to win. And I was like, okay.
Well,
I don't know really what to do with that. But I do think that it's interesting to hear that, because I would say we just did an episode about people thinking about not voting. And one of the things I've been talking to people is, like, a part of that act of choice. And I remember someone telling me when we were doing a thing on Black voters, like, they were talking about how they're not going to vote in 24. And the people around them were really got upset, you know, like, you're wasting your vote, like, da, la, la, like, someone's going to win either way. And the person responded, like, I know that. It just won't be because of me.
Yes.
And I do think that's a feeling I hear more. Not that people don't know that there is might be a Perot effect or a 2016 Jill Stein or a they are kind of aware of it. But I think to the point about distaste of system and candidate, there's more of an act of like, okay. And more so than voting for someone, they're refusing to aid someone they don't like.
Yes.
And so I think when we think about, you know, whether it's young folks and talking about Gaza, whether it's people interested in RFK, that's an energy I really want to track through the year.
Yeah.
Is like, does this bring you back to a candidate? Are you still comfortable sitting out? And are you still comfortable regardless of the impact of those actions? Which I do think it's easier to be now or
I agree with
a couple
this.
Months ago than a month before the election.
Yeah, I mean, because look, if where people are right now holds, Biden's in huge trouble. Because yes. The negative energy I see towards where they're like, no, I hate Trump. I really hate him. But I am not. This is like, if you believe Gaza is evil, this thing that you just said where it's like, but it won't be through me. Like, I will not contribute to this. That is a real thing I hear from young progressives.
Yes.
And that like an affirmative vote for Biden means they're supporting that activity and they absolutely morally cannot do that. I think there's a question to me then of like, how is that situation resolved or not over the next 7 months?
What happens factually really matters here.
Yeah.
And then the pressure will get more real.
Yeah.
Too. That's no matter true. What happens factually. I do think the political pressure will get more real, but I do think the factual resolution or non-resolution or Netanyahu-Biden relationship, the facts are going to impact this too.
And also how Trump looks extra cozy with Netanyahu and they're like, actually, I can see a difference here about how things go. Anyway, I got one more thing to do here. I want to close with what we heard from our Trump to Biden voters. This is a different group that we talked to about Kennedy in recent months. These are people who tend to be most interested in Kennedy or no labels or just like other third party efforts. These are just like the pox on both their housers, double haters. But these guys are interesting because while we hear some interest, we've started to hear more sour assessments of Kennedy and just a voting third party in recent months. Let's listen.
Like, I'm not trying to be rude or anything, and I try to be so inclusive, but I can't stand the way he speaks. The stammer, voice. The raspiness, the hoarseness, the stammer, all of it. He just sounds like creepy Grandpa Joe in the corner that you shouldn't go next to.
If there's other people out there, I'm definitely going to look at them. However, I also feel like a lot of times it's a throwaway vote then, that if I vote for independent, the last time I checked, like a 10% of the population would vote for him. Well, then your vote is basically a throwaway. Of course, we can't all think that, but it would be a throwaway. And then maybe Trump would get in.
His vaccination speak just seems to be based on absolutely nothing. So I haven't even listened to anything else he has talked about. And I'm pretty open-minded about that kind of stuff. But just because it's based on nothing, I can't even take him seriously.
My father was a John Kennedy appointee. So I have loved the Kennedy family. We've got the Christmas cards from them, the whole bit. But I just can't put my name in association with this one. I just don't think he's ready. I don't think he's proven himself. Had he been a Democrat up against Joe Biden, I would have probably thrown my hat with him. But as an independent, I'm just really not sure that he's going to be able to make it.
And you had to look at some of the people who are backing him and why are they backing him. The people that will be backing Trump are backing him. It's just too scary. There's no way I'm going to vote for him.
He lost credibility with me when he was pushing this conspiracy theory stuff. I can't even remember exactly what it was. It's something that has been absolutely proven to be untrue. Even with that, even with me thinking that he's not a great candidate, I might even throw a vote his way just because I really am not impressed at all with Biden, and I'm definitely not voting for Trump.
So... you heard a lot of different things in there, but I will say these tend to be the highly engaged voters, right? They cared enough that they went from Trump to Biden and they made that active choice to switch. Mm-hmm. And Biden needs to hold on to these people. And the third party guys are a real threat to this type of voter.
Yeah.
But I will say, to me, I have seen an education effect, even as we've gotten this close, which is still pretty far away. Of people both learning more about Kennedy and being like, actually, no, guy's kind of a nut.
Yep.
But also just generally of the spoiler effect. And because their votes are not for Biden, they're against Trump.
Yep.
These are the types that I think Kennedy might appeal to for a little bit, because they're like, I want an off ramp. I don't want to vote for either of these guys, that ultimately come home to Biden. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I totally see that scenario. I think that like Kennedy as a more appealing political figure could make all that work. I think he's going to have a hard time keeping those folks because, to your point, you have to hear him out on the vaccines to have a starting point with Kennedy if you get the information.
Yeah.
Right. And I think closer and closer, more information will become more available. More people will start becoming more like these people and tuning in. And I do think it becomes hard because that is such a forefront of his advocacy. It is such a definitional piece of how he got here, and it will be a big piece of what he's talking about. So, I mean, this is why I say I get why the Biden campaign is doing what they're doing, is because I think when we think, like, what is the goal of the kind of, we were talking about Liz Smith and DNC's operation kind of against Kennedy right now, it's to bring those people home.
Yeah.
And they got some time, but that's who they will be concerned about.
Yeah.
Is those persuaded people from 16 to 20 who I do think he's too old. The type of people who like is the reason why Nikki Haley in polling against Biden is up by whatever, you know, like those people would totally vote for someone else if they had another
over double digits. Yeah.
But in this matchup, I see the Kennedy interest and I see the Biden ability to pull them back.
Yeah.
You know, the thing that DNC pulled from our interview was not even about conspiracy. It was about him on abortion.
Yeah.
And that's what they're going to do.
All right. This was awesome. I really appreciate you coming on and do this. Sted Herndon, thank you so much for joining us today. And thanks to all of you for listening to this episode of the Focus Group podcast. Remember to rate, review us, and send mailbag questions to focusgroup@thebulwark.com. We will see you next week.